Subway everyday value means many mouth-watering pile-high favorites are $5 footlongs, like the fresh-toasted tempting meatball marinara and made-to-your-order BLT. The $5 footlong anthem rolls on only at Subway, where great everyday value lives. Subway, eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. It's a special day in the BS Report. Not only the NBA playoffs starting in one day, 24 hours, but on the line, the power forward on the greatest basketball team of all time is on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Kevin McHale, what's happening?
Well, thank you. Quite an introduction.
Well, I forgot to mention that you're currently working for NBA TV and TNT. I still have the 86 Celts as my number one team. Do you disagree?
No, I like that team. That team, you know, I think any team that wins a championship, Bill, you have a chance to go out there and you feel that you can compete with anybody. You know, but I really like that team. We had great length. We had great, great bench play. Had shooters. Just had a lot of stuff. And if you look on that team, there was Bill Walton and myself and Robert Parrish and Larry Bird. And I mean, those are four of the players who made the NBA's top 50. And so it was, we had quite a collection of players there.
And there was never really a team in the history of the league that had that kind of size. It was ridiculous.
I think that was the one thing that really kind of separated us from a lot of the teams. We just had great length, great size, and came off the bench with, as Bill likes to say, he's 6'11", but Bill Walton was 7'1" if he was an inch. And we had a great chemistry. It was just one of those years where everything clicked. And again, it reminds me a little bit of some of these teams you're looking at now going into the playoffs. Like right around Christmas, we really clicked from that point on. Really just we're on fire, and I saw a lot of that happen this year with Cleveland right around the Christmas time, a little bit after Christmas for Orlando to really click. But some of these teams have really clicked, and I think that's what it takes going into the playoffs. You've got to be able to have played well for an extended period of time, for a couple months, and you just get that momentum, you get that confidence, and I think that's what that's what some of these teams do have going into the playoffs this year. So I'm looking forward to the playoffs starting in 24 hours myself.
The 2010 Boston Celtics, a little bit reminiscent of the Bird McHale Parrish era near the end, where running on fumes a little bit, there was the attitude like, well, that's all right, we'll get there in the playoffs. You guys played a little harder in the regular season than they did. Is it an on-off switch? Can you really just turn it on because the playoffs are starting?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a little bit of fool's gold. I think you're kidding yourself if you think you're just going to turn it on, once the playoff starts. I do know that on those teams, we were trying to turn it up after the All-Star break, and we all got together and said, okay, now it's time to really get going, and if we're going to have our best 6 weeks of basketball, it had better be now going into the playoffs. I liken going into the playoffs, if you're a team like Boston right now, that's kind of going into the playoffs limping a bit. I think that they are. I'm trying to think. Their record the last going in, I think, were 3-7 the last 10 games. And I liken that playing poorly going into the playoffs. Like if you're standing at the U.S. Open on the first tee and you don't have your swing, and you look out there and you go, "Nah, this is going to be bad." The rough's a foot high, and I don't have any confidence in my golf swing. And that's the same thing. If you walk in as a team that doesn't have confidence, it's hard to find that confidence in the playoffs. The level of play goes up. So many things happen, and it'll be interesting. Now, I'm hoping they can. And I talked to Danny the other day, Ainge, their general manager, and Danny said, "Hey, everybody's been saying we're gonna turn it on when the playoffs start." And hopefully they will for them. I'd like to see them. They got their hands full, by the way, with Miami in that first round. But it'll be interesting to see how the players play. But to answer your question, it's very hard to turn it on like that. There really is no on-off switch. And I think the years that if you can get healthy, which I think they did, what hurt our team, my team, back with the old Celtics back in the early 90s when we were all older, is we couldn't quite get healthy getting into the playoffs. You know, we just kind of we went in the playoffs every year with one or two guys still dinged up and not really healthy. So hopefully Boston's healthy and get a chance to make a run.
This season reminds me of the season 20 years ago, 89-90. Bird came back from, he had the heels, he'd missed the previous season. And Reggie was just kind of coming on, and the pieces never really fit. The chemistry was off, and everybody's attitude was, oh, no, that's all right, in the playoffs, they'll figure it out. Took the 2-0 lead against the Knicks and then lost the next three, lost game five in the Garden. I feel like we're headed toward that here with, you know, Dwayne Wade being the best player in this series, basically. Do you stand by that adage that the best player in the series is going to win most of the time?
Well, I think there is something to that. There's no question about it. I mean, you know, Miami's coming in too rolling. They're 9-1 their last 10 games, and so they're playing very well. The thing, it really depends. I mean, you know, you could argue that when Detroit won the championship back, I think it was 04 with Larry Brown, that they went out there and they may have had a better player on the team almost than their collection of the players on Detroit. Their opponent may have had a better player, you know, almost every playoff series they played against them. So it's a collection in this, of the talent. I think the Celtics right now have got to beat them with a collection of talent. They've got to keep Wade out of the paint, which they've had a terrible time with this year. I mean, my concern if I'm Boston would be, can we contain Wade? You know, they've had a tough time with the other team's top player really getting off on him. And you're going to have to make a commitment, I think, if you're Doc Rivers. You're just going to have to either say, all right, we're going to let Wade get his and shut everybody else down, or we're going to double team Wade and make everybody else score. And me personally would probably be more into the, let's get the ball out of Wade's hand and let's make everybody else score. But there is something to be said that if you're the most, you know, the team with the most dominant player has an advantage. But, you know, again, I'm gonna watch the Celtics very carefully and see how they come out and see if that collection of Rasheed Wallace and KG and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen, and if that collection of guys together can really, you know, raise their game up a notch and you know, take it to the Heat.
You saw basically every game Kevin Garnett played probably for the first 11, 12 years of his career. Watching him this year, what percentage do you think he is of the KG we remember from his prime?
Well, he's definitely not what he was, you know, but then again, none of us are. You know, I mean, you get older, it's tough. I mean, you know, it's just the natural, progression in your NBA career. You kind of start off as a young player. You play with all energy and, you know, very little brains. And then you go through the middle part of your career where you match your brains and your athleticism kind of match up, and you understand how to play more and you're still athletic enough. And then towards the end, your brain is so much better than your athleticism. You know what to do and everything else. You just can't do it. I think KG is a little bit into that last phase of where, you know, mentally, you know all the things you want to do and the things that you should be doing, but all of a sudden you're just that quarter step slower than you used to be. You know, a lot of little faults that we all had as players were covered up with athleticism and length, but all of a sudden you lose a little of that, athleticism. You retain the length, of course, but yet you're not able to just close down, and you're not able to make those blocks from behind, and you're not able to do a lot of little things. And so what percentage is he? I'd say the injuries have hurt Kevin, and I'd say that if you're just going to go what percentage is he from where they were when they won a championship a couple of years ago, I think he is, you know, 20% diminished from that time.
And it seems like from a personality standpoint, he's had a lot more trouble dealing with this than I think some guys had. Like, you know, I remember in your prime, you know, especially that whole team, a lot of trash talking, and there was like an exuberance. And as you got older and you had to fight through the injuries, you know, maybe you tone that stuff down. With KG, it's like he doesn't really know how to not be the trash talking, smack talking KG. At some point, do you have to let that side go a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at if you're old and kind of beat up, you look at a guy and say, "Hey, I'm going to kick your tail tonight," and you can't do it. When you're, you know, that doesn't do much for you. I mean, you know, yeah, when you're younger, I mean, look at the trash talking and the fun you had. It was different. It seems like now there's so much barking in each other's faces, and there's no pushing, shoving, fighting, elbowing. You can't settle anything amongst yourselves anymore. Just flagrant fouls, kicked out of games and stuff. So most of the trash talking back then Ben was basically stood at the jump ball circle and looked at the guy and said, "Man, I feel good tonight. How are you doing?" I'm kicking your butt tonight, and don't believe there's much you can do about it. And the guy puts that, he goes, "All right, bring it on." You're like, "All right, let's go." And it was much more of a challenge. Let's see who's better. Who's gonna win our individual matchup tonight? You know what I mean? And that was much more of it. Now it's like a lot of barking and a lot of stuff that makes me just shake my head sometimes. Like, what is all this stuff? But you know, you've got to tone that down a little bit. I just think if you can't back it up, man, this NBA is a tough, tough league, and there's a time to. I know one thing. I wasn't yapping my last year like I was yapping in my fifth, sixth year.
Right.
I could tell you that much, because you just didn't feel you could back it up. I mean, talking without backing it up means nothing. And hey, there were nights in my prime when I was, just walked on the floor and you're tired and you're a little beat up and stuff. And the guy looked at you and said, "Hey, man, let's go." And he looked at him and go, "All right, man." You had to fire yourself up like, "Okay, good. I'm glad this guy's challenging me, because he's going to bring out the best in me. And right now I'm tired and beat up and don't have a lot of energy." And sometimes just that nice challenge between players made you play better. But also, like I said, if you can't back it up, then all it does is just fuel fire to the other team. So I'm sure that the entire Celtics team will probably, I'm sure Doc's got him on lockdown with yapping at Wade.
Well, that would be one issue. I mean, on Easter Sunday, KG was getting into it with LeBron, and I'm thinking, come on, KG. you don't want to pour gasoline on the LeBron fire. Just leave this one alone. When you look at a team like the Suns, Steve Nash, 36 years old. You know, by the time you were 36, I think you were either retired or headed toward retirement. Steve Nash, better than ever. Are you amazed by the way things work now in 2010? Guys in their mid-30s can be just as good as they were in their mid-20s.
Amazing to me. I think there's a couple reasons. You know, I think that just the preparation and just the physical fitness element of the game. There's so much more stretching, so much more, put on taking care of your body. I think you don't practice as much as we used to. You know, we flew commercial. A coach would get mad at you and have a 3-hour practice. And, you'd have 4 games in 5 nights and you're 1 day off. A coach would be mad at you and have a 3.5-hour practice. So you really pounded the pavement a lot. These guys in the off season are doing elliptical. They're doing, Stairmaster. They're not on their legs pounding. We ran hills and played basketball. That's all we did. So I think our bodies took a different pounding. So I think one is the physical conditioning, how they take care of themselves. And two, the league, like right now, if you're a Steve Nash, if it would have been 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and you allowed Dennis Johnson, God rest his soul, one of my teammates, glad he made it in the Hall of Fame, great guy. If you allowed Dennis Johnson to hand check Steve Nash and get up there really physical and hold him and stuff, man, I tell you, it's a different game. Now, with not being able to touch anybody on the perimeter, if you're a small guy, you can play a lot longer and a lot more effective just because you can't touch anybody on the perimeter anymore. The old days of hand-checking and really directing guys and being physical would have slowed that down a little bit, and I think you saw some of the smaller point guards kind of got, wore down, and the bigger, stronger guys could hold them. Like, in the old days right now, if you'd let Darren Williams, hold and grab like they used to, Darren would be unbelievable. He'd be able to get away with for his physical strength, and the I'm talking about the point guard from Utah, the physical strength and what he has would just be really, really accentuated. But now you can't do that. So I think it's a little bit of the rules that guys can play a little longer. The game, it's not as physical. I think they're how they train is different, and also some of these guys are just freaks of nature. When you say all that, then you just got to preface that by saying Steve Nash is phenomenal. I mean, just a great, great player. So, he might hate it. And there was always those freaks. I mean, look at Robert. Robert played till he was like 50. And
he was one of the only ones who was stretching, right? Yoga.
Yes, I agree. If I had to do it over again, I would stretch. As a matter of fact, I should be stretching right now as I'm speaking with you. I think that makes a big difference. Like I said, I think they take care of themselves better. But yeah, but Steve Nash is phenomenal. And I tell you, that Phoenix-Portland series will be fun to watch. Portland somehow has found a way. Nate McMillan's done a great job with those guys out there in Portland. And they've just fought through a million injuries. Got another one now with Roy not playing. And so, Steve Nash is a marvel.
When you were playing in your prime, guys were drinking beer after games, guys eating pizza and cheeseburgers, no stretching, no Pilates, all that stuff. Do you think, let's say you come along 20 years later, you play until you're 40 with all this stuff? What do you think?
Well, I think we always still drank beer and ate pizza. We liked that. That's kind of what we did.
All right.
So I think we were more comfortable doing that than Pilates. You know, I just tell you what, I just, for the life of me, I can't see Birdie on a Pilates machine. You know, I just don't see Larry on it with his feet hooked up and doing the big Y spread and, you know, hold it, count to four. You know what? I just don't see this. As a matter of fact, we had practice one day, and they were going to come in and do some testing. They had some yellow cones on the floor, and, you know, Larry's looking at these yellow cones. We're getting older, and, you know, and they wanted to do some just baseline testing. And the first guy did the test, and Larry walked over there, and he said, "You know what, Coach? If I can't beat one of these orange cones, it's time for me to retire. I'm not doing the test." The coach looked around and said, "Yeah, I guess the test is over." So, right. I guess Birdie figured if he couldn't beat an orange cone, it was time for him to retire. We never did any of that stuff. I mean, you know, we didn't do any testing and all that stuff. I'm sure we'd be more into it now than we were back then, which was not at all.
Well, there was that one season, I think it was 87, 88, when Bird came back and he was in shape. And he had like a dunk in an exhibition game, and everybody's like, "Oh my God, Larry Bird is in shape." And, you know, you think of it now, and the guys today, like, everybody's in phenomenal shape. Everybody's looking for all these kind of advantages. Like, Steve Nash has got like this weird sugar diet where the only sugar that he consumes is from fruit. And hey, it does make you wonder, like, are we going to see somebody play until they're 45? Like, how long can Steve Nash go? He's 36 now. Could he play six more years this way? Seven?
Well, you know, I mean, right now the thing is you haven't seen him diminish. I mean, we're going to get to the point where they're all going to be Gordie Howe's.
Yeah.
Gordie Howe played. Gordie Howe was like 68. He was beyond mandatory retirement age for every job in America. And he was still, I mean, yeah, I think they're just freaks of nature. But I do agree with you that these guys really take care of themselves. They look at what they eat and everything else. And, you know, looking back on it, and this is, you know, I'm not saying this is anything that young guys, players should do, but, you know, we'd play a tough game. It'd be hot. It'd be a playoff game. No one thought about, you know, rehydrating with any kind of, well, you drank beer, which is dehydrates you too.
Yeah.
I just got to imagine the next morning we woke up, we were just dehydrated and worse off, and I just can't see how that's going to help you. But you know what? The one thing I'll say that transcends all that stuff is how much you love to play. And if you truly love to play, man, I will tell you that stepping out on the basketball floor, getting ready for that jump ball, it was never a time in my career where you didn't get that little butterfly feeling like, all right, man, you know, but what a blessing to step out here and be able to play basketball for a living. And, man, am I lucky. And thank you, dear God, for giving me the opportunity to come out there, because this is really, really fun. So I think that transcends a lot of stuff. We played hurt. We played stuff, but we love to play. I mean, we just went out there, and I see some of these guys now. You know, a guy sprains his ankle, and he's out for a month.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, "Well, I'm not going to come back till I'm 100%. And in the words of Dave Collins, my first training camp, he said, "Enjoy the first day, rookie." And I said, "Why is that, Mr. Collins?" He said, "Because you'll never be 100% again between now and the end of the season." And he, you know what? He wasn't lying. So the love of the game, and just I think that the era I played in was great, and the teams I played on, people just loved to play basketball. And it was really fun. And like I said, there was always that feeling of whenever the game was getting ready to start, it was like, all right, man, I get a chance to play basketball again tonight. And it was just a great feeling, and you loved it. And it carried you through a lot more maybe than Gatorade did.
A good segue, because my next question was, can you win a title if Vince Carter is your go-to guy in the last 4 minutes?
That had something to do with Gatorade?
No, it has something to do with the guys.
How much you love to, how much you love to play?
The passion.
Oh, okay, I see. Well, I'm doing that series. You know, I am actually doing the Orlando-Charlotte series, so I've been spending a lot of time just going over and looking at everything. And, I mean, I think that Vince is really going to be tested, because there's just no, you know, when they have Boris Diaw and Gerald Wallace and the guys that they put up, and then Steven Jackson, the guys they put across at the 2, 3, and 4, they all play different positions. They can all rotate and stuff. Vince Carter's going to have to guard one of those guys. And all three of them will press him off the dribble, will attack him, will really make him play defense. And so we're going to find out now, and you know, how he responds to that. It's been a while. I mean, you know, Vince has been a player that, you know, that at times has been a bit of an enigma for people. Like, you look at him and he's just so talented, and you think, well, you know, he should be able to bring more, should be able to do this or do that. Now he's on a team that I would say is playing, other than Cleveland, has probably played the best in our league over the last, 2 months. And so they have a chance. They went to the finals last year. They have a lot of confidence. They're going to come into the playoffs. Those guys have been through a long series of, a long playoff run that led to an NBA finals last year. So it'll be interesting. I'm really looking forward to them. To answer your question, can they win it? Yeah, I think so. I think, Dwight is a force unto himself with rebounding and blocking shots. He's becoming so much better. The last 2 or 3 months of the season, he started to become so much more definitive in his moves, attacking the basket. He looks like a completely different offensive player to me the last 2 months, which I really like. But I think that people haven't talked about this much, but Jameer Nelson coming back is going to be big for them. I didn't think Jameer's feisty. He's one of those guys that now that gets in your grill. He loves to play. Like, he's not afraid to challenge other teams' point guard, like, all right, hey, let's go. And he's feisty. They got Barnes, who's feisty. So I think they got a little bit more toughness this year. But at some point in a playoff series, Vince Carter is going to have to carry that team over a 2 or 3 minute period late in the fourth quarter because he's got it rolling, and that's going to offensively, and he's going to have to play some shutdown defense for them to win a championship. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
And Larry Brown is telling his guys, anytime he gets in the paint, knock him down. Knock him down, because that's the rap on Vince. Get a little physical him, and he changes his game, starts shooting jumpers.
Well, I think that that's with everybody. You're trying to get him to shoot jumpers, and however way you got to do it. Like, if you can just play off LeBron and sucker him into shooting jump shots, believe me, you're winning that battle. If you can play off Dwayne Wade and sucker him into shooting jump shots, you're winning that battle. With Vince, you've kind of got to push up on him a little bit. He's different. You've got to push up on him and see if he'll take bad shots, drive him in the paint, knock him down, and see if he'll consistently go in there, because, Vince will fall in love with the jump shot. But the problem is, if you space Vince out, I think Vince is a better shooter overall than, LeBron or Dwayne from the outside. And, he can hurt you from there. So with Vince, it's a little different. I agree with you. Push up on him, drive him to the paint, put some bodies on him, and see how committed he is to going to the hole. I think that I know years ago, the thing was you did a heart check on guys early in the game and said, drive him in here, let's knock him down and see if he really wants to come back in. And I think you might see a little of that at Charlotte.
What would you do with Kevin Durant, who seems to have every conceivable scoring answer you'd want a guy to have? How would you defend him?
Wow. Yeah, you know what? It's like when you're guarding a guy, you can just flat out. I remember we had a playoff series and we were playing New York, and I was guarding Bernard King, and Bernard was on fire. It was in the midst of his just really playing well. They ran every play to him. He had the ball in every possession. They ran rip screens or cross screens for the guy. I mean, you went to Hubie Brown, to Hubie, can you run a play for somebody else, please? I'm tired of guarding this guy. But you get a hand up, you stay between he and the basket, and we played a playoff game. He had 44 points, and I went in the locker room, and Casey Jones walked up to me, and he said, hey, Kevin, you did a great job on him. He'd had 60 on most guys. And I just started laughing. He had 44, and Casey just said, stay between. With Durant, you've got to stay between the basket and he and make him shoot over an extended hand. He can make those shots, but you've got to make him take a lot of shots to get his point. You really can't stop him. He's just got enough. He's got enough in his game off the dribble, going left, going right, pull up. And he pulls up and he fades. He's got that little floater. He really is a scoring machine. And so I think he just, as a coach, you sit down with your guy and say, hey, look, stay between he and the hole, press up, make him go, try to see if we can't make him go left. I know he wants to shoot. He probably shoots better going left, but he finishes better going right. Let's let him, let's make him shoot some jump shots with a hand over, over an extended hand, and we'll live with that. I always liked, I see these young coaches come in our league or new coaches, they say, we're going to stop them. You go, yeah, coach, the guy averages 30. I just don't think we're going to stop him. You stop the guy who averages 4. You go, hold this guy to nothing tonight, You're not going to stop him. You just got to be able to make him take a lot of shots. The same thing with Kobe and these guys. Make him take a lot of shots to get his points. And then, Bill, one thing you've got to do as a coach, you've got to take your temperature out there all the time. You got to have the thermometer out. And if he starts running really hot, you got to get the ball out of his hands. You got to run at him. You got to bring a second defender to him. Make him spit it around, and then make Harden, Westbrook, Green, make those guys, Ibaka, make those guys make shots, because you just, that's the thing you run as a coach. At what point do you say, look, it's a five-alarm fire. We just, we can't put it out with one guy. We just got to run at him. And that's always the interesting thing. And it's funny because you see some coaches like Phil Jackson. I love watching Phil's team because, Phil, man, is so late to go at those guys. There's a guy just complete five-alarm. He's sitting there on the bench, just relaxed. And, and a lot of coaches, he makes two in a row and they run over there and get on him. They start double-teaming. So it'll be interesting to see with the Lakers what they do. I'm sure they're going to give Artest the assignment and say, okay, Ron, see if you can slow him down. So that'll be a fun series to the Oklahoma City Lakers. A lot of good series to start off this, start this playoffs off.
Oklahoma City can't win that series, right? I mean, could it be one of those things where they're just young and dumb, and as the series keeps going and they gain confidence, yep, and LA's old, and who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, here's what I look at these playoff series, and it really makes a determination as to can they win. Now, will they win? I would say the chances are no, they won't. The Lakers should beat Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City has two things that gives you a huge advantage in a playoff. They all year long have been a team that's held teams to a low field goal percentage defensively. They've done a good job of making the other team shoot a low field goal percentage throughout the course of the year. 82 games. When you look at statistics over 82 games, you can look at any statistic over a 4 or 5 game period. They're very, very misleading. But I think over 82 games, a lot of trends come into play. They make the other team shoot a low field goal percentage, which means that the games are going to be close because you're just not going to run away from them. They're not going to be – now, I know lately they've given up a lot more points, but I think they'll get back to their identity of being a much better defensive team in the playoffs. And if you can keep the score relatively close and you have a Kevin Durant who can just flat out go get you 18 points in the fourth quarter, it gives you a chance. I don't care what anybody says, because you start getting those games that are 2- and 3- and 4-point games with 2.5 minutes to go, and anything can happen. And Durant is capable of taking those games over. Now, the problem you got the Black Mamba on the other side, who's probably the best closer in the league right now, and one of the best closers I've seen in the NBA. So, I mean, but that does give Oklahoma City a fighting chance against the Lakers.
You were working the night Oklahoma City was playing Utah for really what looked like it the division title was stake at the time. And I think you were showing another game. I'm not sure why. And you kept flipping over to the Oklahoma and Durant.
I'll tell you why, because
caught fire.
I agree. I'll get back to that game, but I'll tell you why, because it's NBA fan night and you pick them and we play them.
Oh, fans. Terrible job by the fans. But Durant was down 12 with like 3.5 minutes to go. Game was over. And then he just started making 28 footers. And they kept going in, and then it went into overtime, and it was amazing. And I don't know, because they really haven't been on national TV that much. I don't think people realize that, as you just pointed out. If it's like a 3- or 4-point game, he could go toe-to-toe with Kobe. There's not a lot of guys who could, but he actually could.
I agree 100%. That game, by the way, that game that you're talking about, we were doing another game. It was Tuesday night, and we had the Oklahoma City Utah game up on the big screen. And we have about 4 or 5 TVs going, and we were watching that game. And all this, Chris Webber and I are screaming, like, "No way!" And we're just going, "We got to get that game on."
Yeah,
is that end of that game literally between he and Darren Williams just put on a show? That had so much energy. That was such a fun game. But that's when I said to myself, and I had said it all year long, but really reinforced it, that kid's a dangerous, dangerous player. You do not want to play Oklahoma City and let it be a close game, because that kid can step up, and I'm talking about draining threes and making shots and making plays and just an offensive machine. And so,
I wrote in my column today, I wrote that if you look at his stats, and this was only year 3 for him, and you just give him a couple more shots and he makes a few more threes and goes to the line one more time a game, all of a sudden he's at 37 a game, which Wilt, on the only two guys who've gotten there are Wilt and Jordan, basically. I don't think people realize like how close he is to really doing some stuff here and being somebody like the likes of which we've never seen before. I hate to get hyperbole crazy about it, but it's just the way it is.
I agree. Look, I'm with you. I mean, and you're also not talking about a kid who's 24, 25. I mean, he's a young kid. I mean, he's a puppy, and it's not outside the realm of possibility to look at and say, okay, you know what? He's going to shoot better from the three-point line, which he will. He will get to the line a little bit more. You get that little cleverness about your game and stuff like that. So for him to add a few points, like you say, to get up to that kind of ridiculous number, I mean, first of all, 30 is ridiculous. Averaging 30 is so hard in our league. And him doing that at this age is, like I say, it's ridiculous on a winning team. And really, on a fun young team that's really fun to watch. But yeah, I agree with you. And the only thing I would tell you that I think might stop him is the team he's on. He wants to win. He's such a good guy. He would sacrifice scoring, I think, just, you know, for the betterment of the team. And as they get older, if these guys want to score a little bit more, he might defer a little bit more. But that guy is a flat out just, he can score the basketball.
I agree with you. I don't think he'd ever be, because you really need to shoot about 26, 27 times a game to get into that level.
Right.
I'm not sure he'd ever do that. What do you see from San Antonio? I mean, they're kind of the West Coast version of the Celtics a little bit, like the old Lions, but they've actually been playing better heading into the playoffs. You think they do anything?
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say, I was sad to see them match up with Dallas. I was hoping they matched up with somebody else. I like both those teams, Dallas and San Antonio. I was kind of hoping that they might match up against a, you know, Phoenix or a Denver, each one of them, then meet one round later.
Yeah.
That would be fun. But, hey, again, if you're playing against the San Antonio Spurs, first of all, I don't think that the first round game of the playoffs is really going to scare Timmy and Parker and Ginobili. And these guys have won championships. So they're going into this thing with this attitude that, hey, man, this is a playoff series. Let's win. All we got to do is win one game on the road, and all of a sudden we have home court advantages. So whoever's playing them, in this case it's Dallas, they're not going to be intimidated whatsoever. And I think Popovich said it. Popovich said something, it was probably earlier in the year, or maybe it was even last year, but I just remember reading it. And Pop said something that I thought was really interesting. He said, you know, we wouldn't have won, you know, those last three championships if we didn't have Manu Ginobili and making some of those unguardable shots he made down the stretch. And I thought, you know, Pop's really right. Now, Pop's, a lot of the coaches say, well, I drew up this and I drew up that. And in all reality, the players make the plays, especially down the stretches. Coaches are very important, don't get me wrong, but the players have really got to make plays. I've seen Manu getting back to making those when he's going right, stops, jumps back, and makes that, you know, kind of halfway set shot three.
Yeah,
you can't guard that. I mean, he's making shots that are unguardable again. So, San Antonio's played way better. They're the direct 180 of the Celtics. Where the Celtics have been progressively playing worse, I think, as the season's gone on. The San Antonio's progressively played better, and they have the guy again. Timmy's not going to be intimidated. Parker's not going to be intimidated. And they got that guy in Ginobili who just makes plays. I mean, I knew he was back when he's coming down and he's either doing that crazy crossover, then putting the ball behind his back and laying it in. That's when you go, let me tell you something, as an NBA player, when you're going behind your back like you're playing in a rec league, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. You don't do that when you're struggling. He's got it rolling.
And I always think when he's colliding into the cameraman, you know he's got his game going. Because they always have that one drive per half when, you know, some crazy layup and then he knocks over five camera guys and then just runs back up. And he wasn't playing with that abandonment. Who do you have coming out of the West?
I still think the Lakers come up. But Phoenix just flat out scores the ball. They score in bunches. I mean, they could beat them. I think San Antonio's played really well. They're not going to be intimidated by the Lakers. You know, Dallas is, you know, since the trade when they got Hayward and Butler, have played really well. I don't think Denver, without George Karl and you know, with Kenyon, I haven't seen enough of Kenyon now to see how effective he'll be. Utah. So I think the Lakers will come up, but I'm telling you, there are teams like when people just pencil them into the finals, I'm like, are you kidding me? Have you seen Utah play lately? I mean, they're really playing well. Have you seen Phoenix play lately? How about Dallas and San Antonio? I mean, there are some – Oklahoma City is a good team. There's a lot of good teams in the West, but I do think the Lakers will come out of the West eventually, but I would not be surprised if any of those other teams I mentioned can come out of there. And I just think Cleveland's been the best team since right before Christmas. We had them on NBA TV a few times, and it was about end of January. And I said, you know what? We had them again. And I said, go ahead and look at the statistics from right before Christmas when they started playing better. Get me all their defensive statistics. And we have, you know, nice, great staff on their NBA TV. They do all the work for you, as opposed to me right now on my computer doing all my own work for myself for the series. A lot easier. Have you noticed a lot easier to tell someone to get something for you?
Right.
They do it, Bill?
Yeah. I wish I had that.
Much easier.
I wish I had that.
I do right now. But anyway, so, all these statistics for me, and they weren't marginal. They weren't different. They weren't that much different. But yet they had a different look about them. And that's why Chris Webber and I talked about it on TV. I said, you can't point to it statistically because it's not that big of a difference. But when you watch them, they look like a completely different team, just confident and just going after it. And, you know, for a while when they were doing the river dance and all that stuff, I was thinking, oh, man, what's this garbage? They've actually turned me on to it. That, you know what? You know what that river dancing and all that is? That's the 2010 version of, hey, come stop it. That's Larry looking at that guy, you know, in the 80s and saying, I feel pretty good tonight, son. I'm going to give it to you.
Right.
What are you going to do about it? And that's their version, because you can't do that anymore, because that would be disrespectful. And, you know, God forbid the referee heard you say it, he'd probably give you a technical for attempting to taunt or something, you know. But now they dance and do all this stuff. It's like them saying, come and beat us. Can you guys, they have so much fun when they play. There's a joy about Cleveland when they play that. It's really, they've turned me on to it. I'm a big fan of that. So I think Cleveland comes out of the East. I love their way they play. LeBron's been phenomenal. When Mo Williams went out and Delonte West both went out, what he did from an assist standpoint in running that team without the two point guards out was amazing. I mean,
yeah.
Amazing. I mean, he was getting 11, 12, 13 assists. He basically said, well, this is what I need to do for us to be successful. I'll do that. That young man is so talented, it's ridiculous. And in the end, I think this is Cleveland's year to win a championship.
I agree, and you just described what makes him different than some of the other great players ever, is that he can basically fit into where you need him to fit, you know? Like,
right.
He can play point forward, he can play power forward. Doesn't matter. He'll do whatever the team needs to do to win, and I think that's what separates him from Kobe and Jordan. I'm not saying he's better, but... You know, there just hasn't been another guy really like that. I guess you could say Bird in the early years could play, you know, they used to play him at shooting guard. And they play him at small forward and power forward. But LeBron basically could play every position, including center. Where do you rank him right now among the best players you've ever seen in your lifetime?
Physically wise, he's the most – he and Shaq, you know, and you just see guys and go like – like every time I run into Shaq, I just go – you know, after he's a great guy. He's funny. You talk, you laugh. He walks away, and I go, man, that's one big dude. I don't care if I see him every day for a week.
Yeah.
He's walking away, I go, man, that's one big dude. And it's the same. When you see LeBron, you go, in person, you go, wow, that guy is huge. Look how fast he is. Look how he jumps. Look how he runs. You marvel at his physical ability. I mean, and there's been a lot of great players and stuff. But LeBron and Shaq, to me, are just like physical freaks. I mean, those two guys, what LeBron can do at his size, I bet if you put him on a scale, he's got to be 270.
Oh, I would say 280.
I mean, guy,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, and let me tell you something. It's not soft. That guy's built like a truck. I mean, he's amazing. And I'll use the analogy I always use, and people always say to me, you played during the Bird, you know, Magic era, and, you know, how about Jordan and all this stuff? You played against Michael. And I'll use the analogy I always use, and I tell people, I was lucky enough to play with Larry, and I played against Magic just a million times, starting in college, and he was at Michigan State, and I was at Minnesota. I've seen Magic and Larry control games by taking 10 shots. They would have 18 points, 15 rebounds, 13 assists, 3 steals, and a block shot. And were by far the best player on the floor, and they took 10, 11 shots. If you ever got Michael Jordan to take 10, 11 shots, you controlled him. They controlled the game, Larry and Magic, with 10, 11 shot attempts. If you got Michael to take 10, 11 shot attempts, you controlled him. That was the difference between, to me, between those, you know, those three guys. And I put LeBron in that Magic and Larry category, that he can take a low amount of shots and still control the game. That is really, you have to be so gifted to be able to do that. And he can do it on the defensive end and you know, blocking shots. I mean, I always laugh. We had a little thing all year long whenever we showed the highlights of LeBron. You know, when he'd run those guys down from behind and make those unbelievable blocks in transition, you know, a fast break.
Yeah.
And I just said, it reminded me of when you look in the mirror and it says, you know, caution, objects are closer than they appear. I mean, you look at your rearview mirror and you think you're okay, but he blocks your shot. You got to be kidding me. Where'd that guy come from?
Yeah,
and
I wrote
the defensive standpoint that are just fun to watch.
I wrote that he's the first guy I've ever seen in person who actually feels like he shrunk the court. Like the ground that he covers, Pippen was like, I guess the guy before him that I just felt like he was like a cheetah. But LeBron is different. LeBron makes the court seem like it's 15, 20 feet shorter. You mentioned Bird of Magic. I saw you on TNT the night when the documentary was coming out and they asked you about it. And you had the same reaction that I had. I think as the years have passed, I don't want to say that, you know, they're taking liberties with the rivalry, but were you really buying the stuff Bird checking his box score every night?
I didn't know that. I said that night. I said, man, I watched that thing, and I went like, you know, I'm drawing Larry all the time, and I didn't know that. That surprised, you know, Larry was really a funny guy. I mean, he was, you know, people that don't know Larry well don't understand what a great sense of humor he has and what a funny guy he is and how much fun the guy likes to have. So, you know, Larry Willie, we play the Lakers, and he never said, this means more to me. I never knew he was checking box scores on Magic. I knew that, we all looked at the box score with the Lakers to see what they were doing, because we were trying to get home court and trying to win a championship during that run, you know.
Yeah.
We were both in running. So you were looking and saying, you know, and granted, there was, you know, ESPN wasn't on. You couldn't go to bed at night and get all the scores and updates and stuff like that. You should use the paper the next day, and we all flew commercials, so we'd all get out to the airport and get the paper, and everybody would say, hey, the Lakers won last night, and say, yeah, they won, and, you know, we, but it wasn't, I was shocked that Larry had that kind of, that inner thing going between, you know, Magic and he, and I'm telling you what, it had to have been fostered from the, you know, the Indiana State, Michigan State time. You know,
yeah, but wait a second. Do you totally believe it, though, or do you think that as the years have passed and these guys are linked together, maybe they play this up a little bit?
I do believe it, because Birdie doesn't say things just because, I mean, he softens, as we all do when we get older and stuff, but Birdie's just a straight shooter, man. He would not say, he must have looked at his. If he looked at his box scores, he did. I'm convinced he did, and just didn't tell anybody. I was surprised at what, but it was all internal with Larry. He was, you know, Magic was telling his teammates and all that stuff. Larry didn't say all that stuff to us. And you know, do I think that a little bit? Of course, is there some as years go by, probably a little bit more of a glossy, you know, glossy finish to everything. Yeah, but I tell you what, from watching Larry and looking at his face and just watching him talk, there was a thing that I didn't know he had personally with him versus Magic. I did not know that. That surprised me.
The only definite BS that anything he said was when he was talking about the last year when Magic got the HIV and he couldn't play and, you know, the fire kind of went out for him because Magic wasn't around. Bird couldn't walk. I went to those games. The guy was wearing like a 40-pound back brace. He was retiring at the end of that year, no matter whether Magic was going to play or not, which is, it just makes me think as the years pass, I think you forget certain things. The other thing I thought it left out was, you know, the first 5 years of his career, he was measuring himself against Dr. J, not Magic. That was the guy you guys played six times a year. That was the guy that, you know, he had to beat and be better than. And eventually, you know, when he finally took the torch from Doc, that was the big fight. When Bird had the 42 points and they trash talk and they got in the big fight, I went to that game. I thought that was the rivalry the first 5 years. Would you agree?
Well, I tell people all the time that they say, well, the Lakers-Celtics. And I said, well, long before late for me. Before it was Lakers-Celtics, believe me, it was Celtics-Sixers. We went down. It was my rookie year. We were playing back then you played them six times. But it was earlier in the year we were playing Philly. And the funny thing about Philly and us, especially back in those early years, you played six times. but yet you really didn't start playing them heavily till after we had that big after the All-Star break, and you know, or before the All-Star break, we had a big West Coast swing. Then we also had a big West Coast swing right after the All-Star break. We played them a lot from like end of January on. So you might play them five times from January, February, March, and then play them in the playoffs in you know, in May. So we played Philly all the time. But anyways, we're going on. It's early in the season. We're playing Philly maybe four or five, six games into my rookie year. And we get into Philadelphia, and we had a really loose team, a lot of fun guys. We won a championship that year. Tiny was our point guard and stuff. But we had a lot of fun guys. And you're a rookie, and I'm just excited. And got in the locker room, and I'm telling you what, there was a different vibe in that locker room. I walked in, and, man, guys were quiet. They had a different look on. And I kind of went over to ML Carr, and I go, ooh. I said, what's going on here? And I said, playing the Sixers. He goes, they knocked us out of the conference finals last year. He goes, this is different. And I'm telling you what, it was different. I mean, those games were intense. It was a whole different vibe. So I agree with you. My first few years in the league, it was actually much more of a Philadelphia-Boston rivalry. And that went way back. That went way back to, you know, Johnny Most telling me the story of when he got into a fist fight in Philadelphia during the air. What a classic is that? All of a sudden, you know, Johnny's gone. I go, yeah, after the game, I said, boy, that was really fun. You know, man, what a great environment. And Johnny right away, I can't stand those guys from Philadelphia. I can't stand them, Kev. And I'm like, what happened? I thought a game and a guy threw a Coke on me. I told the fans, I'll be right back. And so he ran up and he goes, I popped them one and I ran back and I started doing the game. I mean, can you imagine? Johnny didn't have like a color guy with him. Can you imagine when you're listening to the game and all of a sudden you go, I'll be right back. And of course, Johnny gets on the air. I had to settle something. I'm sorry, fans. You know?
Yeah.
It was a great rivalry. I agree with you.
I went to a lot of great Celtic games in the 80s, and the most intense game I ever saw in my life was Game 7 of the 81 Easter Finals, which really the refs just put away the whistles. And they were like, all right, you guys settle this. We're not going to call anything. Best team, toughest team wins. And that's what happened.
I agree 100%. Yeah, there's no question. I mean, that game, I tell people, it's funny because they say, you know, you won three championships. You know, we were a play or two away from winning five or six championships and a play or two away from winning one. I think the 86 was pretty much we were going to win that no matter what. But, you know, we played Philly in the sixth game, and Andrew Toney drove in from the left side, and I barely got a fingernail on his drive, and I deflected a little bit, and you know, I got a little enough of a block to kind of hit it into the rubber under the basket. It bobbled around. We threw it out, and we got it. And Tiny makes a little 18-foot runner coming down the the right side, dribbling with his left hand, and pulls up and makes that shot. Otherwise, you know, we don't beat Philly in that sixth game to even get to that seventh game. And by the way, I agree, that was a phenomenal. The atmosphere in the Garden, the old Garden, was unreal. We walked out for warm-ups, and everybody was standing and cheering, and they cheered for 20 minutes, cheered during the national anthem, cheered during the introductions. It was a crazy, crazy afternoon in Boston at Game 7.
And I remember after the game, that was the only time where, you know, we didn't win the title, obviously, but the reaction was like we had won the title. Like, it was just Causeway Street parade, basically, for 4 hours, and people standing on cars and just people, especially from the last year, that there was that Philly Boston history and all that stuff. People, we just really wanted to win that one series, you know, and I think the finals were almost anticlimactic. But as you said, you know, it all evens out. In 82, the 82 team was better than the 81 team, but the 80 Tiny gets hurt in 82. The 87 team, if Len Bias had been on that team, maybe you win two or three in a row. Who knows?
Yes, I broke my foot. Robert had bone spurs in the 87. Yeah. And we went and we took the Lakers to six. I think, you know, you get two of your front line players. I had to have surgery right at the end of that season and was in a cast for six months. And, you know, Robert had bone spurs. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They do hang. And like someone said, well, how disappointed would you be? Or someone asked me the question, well, if Cleveland doesn't win, you know, should they fire Mike Brown? And I was like, what? You know, there's so many things can happen. If Mo Williams has in the playoffs, in the conference finals against the Boston Celtics, if Mo Williams, you know, shoots 15% on wide open threes, the same threes he's been making all year long, how's that Mike's? You know, I mean, there's so many things happen in the playoffs. Guys have got to play well. Players have got to step up and make plays. Coaching is important. Don't get me wrong. It's really important. But at a certain point, like I said, you got to make plays. Hey, Andrew Toney drove in there. If I don't get a fingernail on that ball, he lays it in. We're done. So, yeah. You got lucky. I mean, it was I barely touched the thing. So a lot of things happen that just go into it. So, you know, playoffs, they do equal out, and that's why you got to get there enough. I've often said, like, if you're Cleveland, got to the finals 2 years ago, or 3 years ago. What was it? 3 years ago now? Boy, time flies.
Yeah, 2007, but,
Yeah, 3 years ago. You know, got to the conference finals again last year. You know, get to the NBA. You've got to make runs. You've got to put yourself in position to win championships. And then if you put yourself in position enough, you'll get your share. But you'll probably have teams, like you said, I thought the 82 team, in all honesty, was the second best team I played on besides the 86.
I agree. You won 18 straight, I think, at one point.
Yeah. Tiny dislocated his shoulder down in Philly, drove on the ball, and guy dove on his back, and his shoulder popped out, and he still took Philly to seven games, but just, you know, we had kind of lost our floor leader. So it's a lot of things can happen, but it's going to be a fun playoff series. I'm looking forward to it.
My dad's still upset about Tiny's dislocated shoulder. I want you to know that. Even though it's been 28 years, he still talks about it. You know, you mentioned when you broke your foot. You came back. It was hurt. You came back in the playoffs. You broke it. You took a couple games off. Then you came back again. And you know, the foot was never really the same. Would you do that again?
I always say no, but at the time I probably would do it. If I was back in there again and I thought I had a chance to win another championship, I probably would do it again. You know what I mean? At the time you're thinking, okay, well, it hurts. I can play through the pain. I'm not that concerned about it. I'll get a little shot in there. I'll be able to handle the pain. Hey, go out there and play. And, you know, is my 80%, 70%, whatever you're at, is that better than some of the guys coming off the bench, you know, being healthy? And you thought, well, I had told the coach, hey, coach, I'm going to go out there and play as hard as I can for as long as I can. And if I'm not effective or if it hurts too bad and I can't play, I'll let you know. But if I can go out there and try to help the team, I'm going to try to help the team. So,
but you didn't know that. Again, you didn't know you're going to play a double overtime game in Milwaukee on the broken foot.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't. Well, I also didn't know that I had a stress fracture in my navicular, and then it became a complete fracture. As a matter of fact, during that game, because I had a burning sensation through that, and they didn't take another X-ray till after the season. By the time I took another X-ray, the guy said, "Oof," he said, "that stress fracture now just became a complete fracture. Went all the way through the bone, and it was about a third of the way through the bone when they diagnosed it." But you know what? I mean, back then you played through stuff, and you're young and dumb. You don't think very much. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I did. And, you know, I mean, I look back on it, and I always say, boy, I'd never do that again. But you know what? Something, you put me in that situation where you're in the conference finals, you have a chance to win a championship. I'd say, strap me up, baby. I'm going to go out there and go after it again. You only go down that road so much. And
The Laker fans need to understand that you would have blocked the baby skyhook with a healthy foot. You would have blocked it. I've watched the replay 10,575 times, and you just missed it. Healthy foot, you block it. We win the title.
There you go. Yeah. Then you know what? Then that broken foot would have made me feel a little better today when I'm hobbling around on it.
When you see Rick Mahorn, do you just want to punch him? He was stepping on it in that playoffs.
Yeah, he was stepping on my foot, and I looked at him and I said, "I tell you what, Rick, this foot's going to heal, and you're still going to be 6'7" and fat, and I'm going to kick your ass." And and I did. So I was a man of my word on that one. Every time I went at him after that, I tried to kick his rear end, and I told him, I said, "Yep, my foot will heal, but you're going to be fat and 6'7".
That's great. You know, and the sad thing is, I don't think we'll ever see another playoff series like that again. Like, I'll never forget. I went to Game 5 to get the Bird steal, you know, in 87, and, you know, Laimbeer got in the fight with Bird the game before, and the Garden, they just wanted blood. They just wanted Laimbeer's blood. And I wrote this in my book. I am convinced to this day that we brainwashed Chief to punch him. I really think telepathically, 15,000 people just convinced him to do it. I will always feel that way.
Yeah, Chief had been taking his Taekwondo classes for stretching, and I told him, I said, "Well, that came in handy." Not so much from the stretching, but you landed a couple good ones right on the top of his gourd.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? That was one of those guys that, you know, you can never really actually see people hit Bill Laimbeer enough. You know what
right.
I mean? It's not like with most guys, you say, "Well, that's enough." Very hard to say, "Well, that's enough. You should stop with Bill." It's like, "Give him another one, would you?" Those were fun, you know, and I enjoyed those times. And again, people always ask, "Oh, well, don't you wish you played today?" and stuff like that. And I wish I could play just basketball because it's just fun. You love doing it. But I was really glad the era I played in, and I wouldn't change my era for any era. It was, I thought Magic and Larry just came out and just revitalized the NBA. It was fun. We had Sixer Detroit, different rivalries, New York, you know, L.A. It was just fun, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, I think we swung too far the other way. And as you mentioned before, they're so concerned about guys looking at each other and guys talk yapping and stuff like that. And it feels like it's sapped the competitiveness of these games to some degree. And I don't know. I feel like there should be a middle ground. We swung too far the other way, and maybe we need to go back, take a couple steps backwards.
I agree. Like, there's nothing wrong with two people not liking each other. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, as a matter of fact, I actually think I'd much rather look. I knew Joe Lou. I knew Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali didn't like each other. I was dying to watch every one of those fights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's something about it. There's something about when you know that those teams don't like each other. It excites you more. You're like, all right, man. I know these guys don't like each other. And I'm all for it. And of course, I know there's got to be some form of. You just can't be having it like when I first got in the league, where there was a fist fight and everything broke out and things ended up in the fans swinging, and it was kind of crazy. But there's got to be a happy medium in that.
What was the best fight you ever witnessed when you were on the Celtics?
Well, I think Larry got into it with Bristow one time, and it kind of happened so fast, and man, Larry was just swinging. And I mean, he and Allen, I mean, it was really a fast one, but if I tell you what, it was like, man, you looked up and Birdie was throwing haymakers all over the place, and you know, I didn't even know what started it, man. We all were like, wow. But those were ones that Larry connected on a few. But any one of those punches that they were either throwing, if either one had connected solid, the guy would have killed the other guy. I mean, it was not like we're out here to make friends. I mean, they were swinging. So yeah, there were some good ones. I mean, we went in the stands one time in Philly, and that was Cedric Maxwell, and
yeah,
he got into it, and the whole thing erupted. The bench ran in there, and afterward, ML, we were standing on the side of the court, and ML is challenging like the entire section to come out and fight us, and I'm like, and ain't that smart? There's like 4,000 of them, but that was those were just fun days.
And you like the TV thing? You're happy.
Yeah, I do enjoy the TV thing. The TNT Turner people, NBA TV, are just great. It's fun. Chris Webber's a great guy. Just enjoy working with him. Ernie's the best. And Kenny and Charles are just a hoot to do that. And I've done some games with Kevin Harlan, my old running partner here from when we did the games in Minnesota, and Doug Collins. And just the people there are just fantastic. So I really enjoy myself doing that.
I got to say, I thought you were doing a really good job coaching that Timberwolves team last year. And I actually went to a Clippers game right before Jefferson got hurt. And I thought the team was playing really well and it was headed somewhere. I couldn't believe that they didn't want to bring you back as a coach. What happened?
I don't know. I mean, I just think they wanted to make some changes and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, probably the best thing that happened for me too.
Yeah.
That with all the changes they made, you're in the middle of a rebuild. Then you rebuild on your rebuild. You know, it's like remodeling under remodeling on your house. Sometimes your house takes on a lot of different looks. You've got to kind of stick with something for a while. And I thought when they when they wanted to just trade everybody and go younger yet, and to me, now Al was coming off that ACL injury and stuff, but Al's a guy in the low post that you can build your team around. If you have a low post player, you need shooters, you need guys to spread the floor. You need different things. They have Al in the low post. Well, they played the triangles, so it didn't make any difference, but they had a bunch of slashers. If you have slashers, you want Mometo Kerr as your center. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Guy that can step out, spread the court, and do some stuff. So they had kind of like a weird team. It's like they had, in football, they had a bunch of blocking linemen for running, run block linemen, and they had a drop back quarterback.
Yeah.
It just didn't fit, and so that the whole thing about our league is just getting things that fit and stuff like that. But no, it was it was the best thing that happened to me. I really enjoyed my time off, and we'll see what happens on the stretch.
Well, sometime. I'm glad you're doing TV because it finally enabled you to make your first BS Report appearance. And good luck in the playoffs. So you're announcing Orlando Charlotte.
Yes, I am. I'm doing the game. We got a game on Sunday afternoon at 5:30. Eastern time, and then we got the Wednesday night game, and I think it's Saturday, Monday. So that's
who's your partner?
Games in the show. No, I. Who am I partner?
You need a partner. You need somebody to do play by play.
I know. Oh, Matt. I'm with Matt. Does the Toronto games, the play by play. So I'm looking forward to that. It'll be fun.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for coming on the BS Report.
Right. No problem. Talk to you later.
All right. Just to cap this off, we're going to call my buddy House at work, quickly try to figure out who's going to win the NBA title. Just want a second opinion.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
What's happening? You're on the podcast.
Oh, what's happening?
You're following Kevin McHale. How about that?
Those are big, sweaty, stinky armpit shoes to fill. I mean, I really can't come behind that guy.
One of the greatest. I made him talk 80s Celtics. It was awesome.
Did he enjoy it?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
I kept him on a little longer than maybe he intended, but I don't care.
Yeah.
NBA playoffs, quick.
Sure.
Just wanted a second opinion. The Lakers, I'm not feeling it. I picked them not to win the West today.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, I don't like at all the way they've kind of limped through the last 15 games of the season, and they
don't
strike me as the kind of team that has a switch to flip. Now, look, we could come in, they could come out these next week and blow the Thunder out of the water and shut us both up quickly, and you know. Kobe may yet have another speed in him, but I just really was unimpressed with the way they entered the postseason.
Yeah, and it was kind of the West Coast version of the Celtics. So the Celtics are in, you know, significantly worse shape, obviously. But
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix. I like the way that they've been playing. I think somebody like Utah. I wish that Boozer wasn't hurt.
Well, Kirilenko, they just lost for round one. I think that could. No, I don't know what to make of that series.
I thought he was going to be back.
It just happened.
That's too bad.
So, who knows? That's kind of one of those I don't know what the F's going to happen series. Complete stay away.
There are some amazing series in here.
How excited would you be on a scale of 1 to 10 if Oklahoma City just said "F you, Lakers" and brought it to the table?
Oh, it would be amazing. It would rival the Warriors over Dallas. I mean, I think that's that's the all-time high watermark for, you know, an upset in a series.
Oh, I think this would be better, though. I hate to say it. You know, they're not going to have this as good of a crowd as the Golden State obviously.
That's the difference to me.
More hateable opponent, though.
I guess. Yeah, that's right. Dallas, Golden State isn't exactly a heated rivalry. And not that Oklahoma State, you know, City and L.A. is a rivalry, but Seattle and L.A. used to be a rivalry.
What, I mean, other than Sonics fans and Laker fans, who doesn't jump on that OKC bandwagon if they win game one and they're up 10 in game two or something?
Oh, it would be amazing. It would be very exciting.
I'm really excited for that series. And even though I have my guard up because I watched way too much of that team this year, and I just don't think they're ready yet.
They're a year away.
They're a year away, and as I wrote today, I really think they blew it by not getting Camby, because I think if they had Camby, that's a team that could win the West.
Yeah,
I know that sounds crazy, but they really could win the West if they had Camby.
I don't think that, but I do.
Why not?
You were on the record as being a strong.
Why don't you think that?
Because it's just not enough. It's just one guy. Who else on that team has played in a single playoff game that matters?
Who's going to outscore Kevin Durant in the last 4 minutes of playoff games?
Okay, Kobe. Kobe's one guy.
I mean, yes, on paper, he has the experience, all that stuff. But Durant showed me something in that Utah game. Mikhail and I just talked about it. He just didn't want them to lose, and he was making crazy shots, and there's something different about him.
No, I believe me. I love that team. I love him.
I'm not rational.
But,
I'm
right.
not rational about them. He's like my son. He's like my son in a little league field. And I'm like, oh, look at him. Look, he can hit the ball. I think he'd be a major leaguer. Yeah, I'm probably not the right person to discuss them. But I do think that people are going to be surprised, because they're really not on TV that much. I think people are going to be surprised how good they are defensively.
I think
and
people
are
going to. Well, and that feeds right into what I was going to say, which is people will enjoy their style of play. It's a great style of play.
Yeah.
They're very active.
We took some hits, though. Like, the Brandon Roy getting knocked out of the playoffs was a huge blow.
I know. That's right.
They had a good thing going on there. It's too bad.
I feel cheated. The Bogut injury, the Brandon Roy injury, there are some injuries. We're not getting Denver at its best because Kmart's still struggling along. I just feel a little cheated because this playoffs could have been epic. I mean, it still may prove to be, you know, fantastic, but I just wish everybody was at full strength. Tony Parker still coming back.
I would even throw the Robin Lopez injury in there.
I mean,
that guy was playing their crunch time center, rebounder, shot blocker, and pushed Amar to another level. He makes them a lot less flexible. I would have picked him to win the West if he was healthy.
Phoenix?
Yeah.
Who do you like between Dallas and San Antonio?
I picked Dallas just because they've had so much success against them the last few years.
It's amazing that one of those teams is going to lose in the first round of the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it was a shame that ended up being the matchup.
Yep.
But I blame San Antonio for not winning more than 50 games.
Well, they had a terrible schedule for the last 25 games of the season.
I know, but they started out slow.
They did.
And,
you're right.
You know, that's just with the kind of talent they had. I know they had some injuries, but come on.
Yep.
And I really think Timmy slipped the last couple months, which is the real reason why I'm not seeing them as a finals team.
But, could be, but Timmy in the playoffs could be a different horse.
Give your Mikhail was diplomatic about Vince Carter. I was not as diplomatic in today's column. I'm going to give you the tie-breaking vote.
Why was Mikhail diplomatic? Well,
he's on TV. He's got to be diplomatic.
Right.
Why don't you reiterate my feelings for Vince Carter?
I'm not sure that I can reiterate them. I can just share with you my own feelings about Vince Carter. I mean, you have a guy who's made a career of coming up small in the you know, every you know, pressure situation. And on top of that, he's the poster child for the quit on a team, as it were.
Yeah.
I mean, he you know, quit on a city and a team in a full season.
He quit on that team. Jason Kidd demanded to be traded to get away from him.
Right.
And people are like, oh no, Jason Kidd just wanted to win. I think they it's not like it was a disaster with Vince. I just think he wanted to get away from Vince. I'll always believe that. And then, you know, people seem to forget that this guy was available for 20 cents on the dollar last summer, and there weren't a lot of takers. Not teams knocking down New Jersey's door making offers for Vince Carter.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, his biggest claim to fame is his spectacular dunks. He's made a whole career on spectacular dunks. That's not the guy that I want to, you know, have my playoff success, you know, rise and fall with.
Oh, and by the way, he doesn't make those dunks anymore.
Right.
Part of my column and part of this podcast is making arguments, trying to back him up. I know I'm going to, you know, the goal is to be better than 50%, be 70%, whatever. I know I'm going to be wrong from time to time. Sometimes I feel just like I'm right about stuff. And I felt that way with the Durant-Oden thing. Other things have come along that just is a whole other level of almost like I'd bet my life on this. Now, I was wrong last year with the Cavaliers winning the title. That was one of those times where I was off. This Vince Carter thing, I just think people are crazy if they think that he could be the go-to guy on a championship team. I don't see it. I think it's insane. I also don't see how they can win a title without him being the go-to guy, because I look at that team and who else is going to do it?
That's precisely the point. So that's what I was going to jump all over. They don't have a solution to who can catch the ball and shoot the ball and put the ball in the basket inside of, you know, 2 minutes when you have to score baskets. You have to score baskets to win the game. He has to touch the ball, and you live with you know, the horse you rode in on.
We don't think Charlotte can beat them, right?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. You're
giving
me.
It's a good story, though. It's a good story, Charlotte. Absolutely
you don't think they
not.
Could, you know,
no.
Larry Brown knocking him down?
No. They may win one game.
Give me your objective opinion of Miami Celtics.
I think it's going to go 6 or 7 games. I think it's going to be heated. I think it's going to be enjoyable. I think the Celtics are going to win because of the, you know, just too many vets who've been there. Before, and this might be kind of their last hurrah. I actually think it's going to be akin to last year where, you know, they go to a 6 or 7 game series that's kind of a brawl, and then that's their whole playoff.
Right. You realize Miami is the best player in the series, right?
I understand. I know. Right. There's no arguing that. But I just think, you know, too many too many playoff games logged by that group of Celts.
How many minutes of the Atlanta-Milwaukee series will you watch?
I actually like Atlanta, so I'm going to watch a little bit of it. I want to see what team shows up for that series. And see
do you like Atlanta because of the food there, or do you like the
I
team?
I do like the food there. I also love the golf courses there. I was there last weekend, played a lot of golf. It was fantastic.
Mm.
No, I love that team. They're a big team. They're an athletic team. I like Josh Smith. I love the crazy Serbian. He's always good for a fight.
Pakulia.
Yeah. I don't know if he's Serbian or Croatian or what he is, but...
Yeah, I'm probably not going to watch. I'm going to pick my spots with that series. And I got to say, I'm not overly excited about Denver, Utah.
Really?
I don't know why?
Not?
I don't know why. I need to. Something needs to happen in that series to talk me into that. I just don't think Denver's that good.
What's not fun about watching Darren Williams?
There's a lot to be said for watching Darren Williams.
Yeah,
I think that would probably be why I watch it.
Plus, those games, every one of the games in Utah. Will be spectacular because that home crowd is so much fun. I'm going to watch a lot of that one.
So that basically we're saying we're going to watch every series.
I am. I'm going to watch, you know, it's 40 games and 40 nights.
I got to explain this to my wife.
It's my favorite time of the year.
It really is. I love round one, especially when the matchups are good.
Yeah.
The Cleveland-Chicago even, which is probably going to be a sweep, but at least there's a chance Derrick Rose might just go bonkers.
Yeah, and that would be worth watching just to see.
Yeah, and there'd be some good trash talk in that. Those guys know each other. I think that'll be a fun one. I'm more excited for Orlando-Charlotte than you are.
Yeah, I'm not that excited for that one. I just think that Orlando is going to summarily dismiss them. I just think they're going to put the beat down on them.
Mm. That's the thing. Orlando, when they're up 10, looks like world beaters.
Right.
And I'm not sure what round it's going to be when somebody is going to make them start playing in the final 4 minutes, but it's going to happen at some point.
It could be against Atlanta. Depends on what Atlanta team shows up.
God, the Atlanta-Orlando stats are not encouraging for Atlanta.
Yeah.
It just looks like that's the one team. I mean, even Cleveland, I watched that. You know, they lose to Cleveland every time.
Yes.
But I've watched three of those games, and in all of those games, they were right in those games, and then LeBron did his thing, but they weren't far away. Like, that wouldn't surprise me if Atlanta-Cleveland was like a 6 or 7-game series.
Ooh, that's interesting.
As crazy as that sounds. I know they've had no success against Cleveland.
Yeah.
It seems like Atlanta kind of gets Cleveland to play their style.
Yeah.
But then Cleveland beats them with it. But when you're getting the other team to do what you want to do.
And Atlanta definitely has. The thing that's fun about those Atlanta-Cleveland games, Atlanta has an inferiority complex when it comes to Cleveland. They measure themselves. They said so each of those games. These are measuring stick games for us, and they played so hard in them.
Mm.
They're really fun games to watch.
Yeah.
They just don't have LeBron.
Yeah. We think he's going to win, right?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think so. Although I will tell you, you know, last year was kind of dumbfounding. I didn't see at all the you know, the collapse of the second-tier guys. And I continue to blame it on the scheduling. You know, Cleveland had off almost a full week, and I really think that killed their momentum and killed the confidence of, you know, guys like Delonte West and Mo Williams, who were just making buckets like the basket was, 10 feet wide. And then they got into that Orlando game, and the whole team got tight.
It was a very strange – you're right. It was a variety of events that led to – so they're at game one, I think they're up like 25.
Yeah.
And then Orlando started charging back. That crowd got tight. Cleveland got tight. And the series was just never recovered.
Yeah, that's right.
It was almost like the worst thing that could have happened to them when they went up 25 or whatever they went up with. But it's a totally different Cavs team, though. Jameson gives them – the flexibility that they just didn't have last year.
Now
they can play any style. You pick the style, and they will play it and beat you with it.
More importantly, it's a totally different Orlando team.
Yes.
Because
of Vince
Carter is a significant downgrade.
You know, I think they lose that Haydu thing either way, though.
What, if they still had him?
Yeah, because then he signs for big money, and he shows up out of shape and not giving a crap like he did in Toronto.
I don't know.
He really wasn't that good in the regular season last year. Like, it was defensible to let him go.
Yep.
I would have kept both. I mean, they're already screwed.
Kept Turkoglu and signed VC?
No, the VC trade was basically, you know, the expiring salary cap guys and Courtney Lee. Like, they chose between Hidu or Marcin Gortat and Brandon Bass. That was the money choice. That's basically what it came down to. And we could have lived in a world where they had Hidu and Vince, and they chose not to dive into that world.
It's so funny, Gortat and Bass. Those two guys both made, you know, important contributions to their teams respectively in the playoffs, and now are off, basically off the planet.
Yeah, Gortat's gotten a little bit more run lately, but it would have been interesting. I certainly would like their prospects more if they had Hidu.
Me too.
But what else are you excited about for the playoffs? Anything?
No, I think we've covered all of the big items. I just think this West is so wild. Any one of five teams can win the West to me.
Who are you going to root for?
That's
since you don't have a team.
I kind of want to root for Phoenix.
Me too.
I really like Steve Nash, so I kind of want to root for them. And I like their style of play. I love
Nash. Nash is, other than George Karl, Nash is the best story in this playoffs because I wrote this today, but, you know, 36 years old, and it looked like the window was closed for him. And now all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Amari becomes Amari again.
I hate when that happens. So you wrote about this already. Did you already write that you're rooting for Phoenix or something?
No. Okay. I wrote that I thought Nash was...
I just dislike agreeing with stuff that you've written when I haven't read it. Sounds like I'm just, you know...
A lot of this stuff we've talked about, though.
Yeah. I just don't want to be your yes bitch.
Well, you weren't my yes bitch with the Amari thing because we argued pretty heartily about that.
I think that
you never thought they should give him up because of what he was in 2005, and I thought he was a lost cause. And now, last 3 months, holy mackerel.
Yeah. Amari, he's back.
We disagree on a couple of things. You think the Lakers are going to... I totally disagree with you.
I think they're going to decimate OKC. But, I think they're very vulnerable.
You know what's a good matchup for OKC? Russell Westbrook against Derek Fisher's dead body.
That's going to be exciting.
That's a nice one for him. And I also think Durant is going to just beat up Ron Artest. Ron Artest doesn't have the quickness to guard him.
The Lakers are so big, though, and they play good zone defense. They play
no Bynum, though.
I know, but still.
I think I'm getting the feeling out here. The Lakers fans are a little worried of the Durantula.
The no Bynum thing is a big deal. That's the reason that I feel like they're extra vulnerable.
We didn't mention him when we went through all the dumb injuries that have sapped this playoffs.
I know, but it's another one.
Yeah, the Bynum thing, you know, if they were rolling with him healthy and everybody healthy.
Yep.
Yeah, I would say yes, they're going to the West. But
it would have been a fun one.
I do think the longer this goes on, though, the more dangerous they get. It's almost like you got to get them in one of these first two rounds, I think.
Yeah.
If it goes to the conference finals, have their feet under them.
I agree.
When do you want to do the dual thing? Next week?
Yeah, let's do it next week. I watched all of the first one and half of the second one, so I'll be ready next week.
You want to make a Caps prediction?
I think they're going to win this series. It's going to go six or seven games now because they lost the first one, but they did this last year against the Rangers. And beyond that, I have no idea. I have no idea. I mean, you know, they're still young. It's such a young team.
I love the hockey playoffs. I watched two games last night.
Who did?
As I was working on my column, I watched the entire Kings Canucks game.
Who did Damashek and Bucci Gross like?
Both of them like the Caps.
Oh, yeah. That's encouraging.
Yeah.
They have the most talent. It's just, you know, it comes down to goaltending and those tough goals.
I got to say, your goal
yesterday.
Your goalie's first name makes it tough to take that team seriously.
Jose? You're not a fan of Jose?
No.
Jose.
His name is Jose.
Jose.
Or something. He sounds like a cologne.
You pronounce the J on it. That's right.
Yeah, he sounds like a cologne. I can't take him seriously. But last year, I couldn't take Marc-Andre Fleury seriously either with the hyphen.
And there he is, Stanley Cup champion.
I hate the Bruins, you know, who weren't going to do anything anyway. But it sucks that they're playing Buffalo, and it's so hard to root against Buffalo.
Yeah.
This beaten-down, sad sack sports city. All they have is a Sabres team.
They're great, though. They have Ryan Miller.
Good uniforms by them, too. Them and the Canucks have been the uniforms I've been the most impressed by.
Yeah.
But I knew I hadn't been following hockey this year when the Bruins had a goalie named Rask, and I had no idea who it is. I was like, who's Rask? What happened to Tim Thomas? My dad's like, Tim Thomas sucked this year. Stop following the Kings. He's like, angry at me. I'm like, I don't follow hockey. What do you want from me? All right, we'll talk to you next week for the duel.
All right, talk to you.
targets and sat on. Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
With all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway now has breakfast. And unlike the competition, you can get it made just the way you want. Like the Subway Western Egg White Muffin Melt. Add jalapenos, banana peppers, tomatoes, or try Monterey Cheddar. Build your better breakfast at Subway. And after you build your better breakfast, grab your favorite $5 footlong to go. Made to your order all day, every day. Only at Subway.